Okay, three, two.
Three, two, hit it!
It's time to double down with Max and Stacey on Sputnik Radio. Now, coming up on the show, we talk to market analyst Carl Denninger of market-ticker.org. But first, it was nearly 90 years ago that Yale economist Irving Fisher proclaimed on the front pages of the New York Times, quote, stock prices have reached what looks like a permanently high plateau. I know what you're thinking. You're thinking he was early on that call. Had he waited 89 years, he'd be right, Stacey.
Certainly, if you read the financial press in the United States, or I guess around the world, because markets are booming and booming and booming and have been doing so, certainly since Trump was elected here in the United States, this epic stock market rally will get a second wind from stellar earnings, says the financial press. The stock market's stupendous start to the new year could even get more interesting as the corporate earnings season kicks off in earnest. There are high hopes for fourth quarter results, Max.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, I mean, it's the trend is your friend, and the trend is moving higher. The tax bill is certainly helping, and a lot of money's coming to the United States from overseas. That should give a big boost to things. I see that companies are giving employees some cash bonuses. I guess they're going to spend that. That, I guess, will help. You know, yeah, looking good.
Well, I had kind of predicted fourth quarter results would be good because of the tax reform. I know for a fact that I went out and bought some computers and some iPhones and things that I know I needed to replace, but I brought it forward to this year because I could write off more against the following year. So John Butters, a senior earnings analyst at FactSet, projected S&P 500 companies will report a fourth quarter earnings rise of 10.2%, the second strongest since 2011. Based on the consensus forecast. However, the actual pace of earnings increase may be closer to 14%, he said, given the large numbers that are turning in results above estimates. And in fact, the article goes on to say that because this has been the best start to the year since 2003, if the market continues to gain at its current speed, annualized returns to the S&P 500 could jump as much as 193%. In 2018. So I think it's time now to turn to Carl Denninger to ask him what he thinks about these financial analysts being covered in the financial press here, saying that markets could return as much as 193% in 2018. What do you say to that, Carl Denninger?
I think it's kind of an interesting side that he put the numbers in the same report, both of them. If earnings are going to be up 10 or 15%, why would the market be up 193%? That doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense, right? I mean, if the price of a stock is the discounted value of its future cash flow, then if the earnings results are going to get a one-time 15% increase, which, I mean, that's what a tax drop does, right? It's a one-time deal. You get your increase and then, you know, there's no increase that you get the next time because there's not going to be another tax drop. There's just the one. Why would the stock market double? That doesn't make any sense unless, of course, the entire thing has absolutely no basis in fact and is just a bubble, which, you know, then you're buying simply because somebody else is buying and you're buying because you think you can sell it to somebody else at a higher price. And that can go on for an awfully long time. I mean, you look at things like Bitcoin, where there's zero real value in a series of digital numbers. The only reason that you would own a Bitcoin is because you believe that at some point in the future, somebody will pay you more for it. And the same thing is true of an awful lot of things. But, you know, we've done this before. We did this in the 1990s with internet stocks that, and we heard the same thing. And by the way, the NASDAQ did double in 1999. So there is certainly precedent for this. Of course, we all know what happened in 2000, right? That didn't work out so well. Although for the first few months in 2000, it looked like it might double again. The market was up huge in January and February. And then, of course, everything went down the toilet. So we've got the same dynamic going on now. I find it interesting that all of these different financial pundits, you know, you listen to the media, the financial media every morning, you'll hear this, you know, companies being so-called Amazon, for example, which, by the way, is a declaration that you have a firm that is exerting monopoly power. That's supposed to be against the law. And yet, when we get down to it, exactly how many times do you get to price in tax cuts? And where is the actual economic expansion? I think it's very interesting that, yes, indeed, we've gone from 2% to 2.5% maybe over the last 12 months. That's a substantial percentage increase. But does it in any way justify a multiple expansion that now puts us on a price to sales basis? I don't think it's ever been there before, to tell you the truth. If it was, it's somewhere from like 1999. So no, I don't think that this is justified at all. But will there be a continued explosion higher in price? Well, it certainly can happen. It has several times in the past. So the real question is, what's your risk tolerance look like? Because if you're buying companies like Amazon in the $1,300 a share range that are trading at 200 to 300 times earnings and 100 times the forward earnings, in other words, the analysts are saying they expect this company to make twice as much money, not 15% more, but twice as much money next year. And even so, you're still paying 100 times that earnings number. How does this work? When do you run out of people? Okay, and that's always the question that you get with these exponential curves. And the reason they're always sucker bets is that there's only a certain number of people on the planet. You look at Facebook, which has repeatedly claimed to have more advertising reach in the United States than there are human beings in the United States. So they say, we reach this many people in this population cohort in the U.S., but there aren't that many citizens and people in the U.S. in that age cohort. So how did that happen? Well, it obviously didn't, but nobody in the market seems to care. And that's what happens in a mania. It's the same thing that happened with tulips. It's the same thing that's happened time and time again. In the 1990s, when I got out of the internet business, if you added up all of the S1s from companies that were filing to go public and all of their projections from their first couple of quarters after they reported as public companies, when the stocks were going up at 50, 100, 200, 500% a year, and you added up their claims of what they were going to make, they were claiming 10, 15 times the global GDP in forward expectations. How can you ever have more than 100% of anything?
Okay, so let's jump to the notion of these tax cuts and whether or not the soaring stock markets justify that. Certainly, the corporate tax rate has been slashed hugely, in the words of Donald Trump. But we know that the multinationals, of course, never paid the headline rate of, close to 40%. But certainly the small and medium-sized enterprises, where the backbone of the economy, where most of the jobs happen, certainly they will benefit from the tax cuts.
That's true, but they're not the ones that are driving the stock market moves. See, that's the problem, is that you look at companies that are, for example, the small and medium, especially small businesses. Medium businesses tend to have a fair amount of international exposure. Small business typically has little or none, and they will benefit tremendously because that tax rate is going to go down for them. Now, for the large multinational company or for those, let's take a firm like Amazon that pays essentially no corporate tax because it makes no profit. So it pays no tax. Well, they're not going to get any benefit at all. However, the small business that has been paying this high corporate rate, they're going to see a large gain, but they're a small piece of the overall stock market. So why would the large enterprises that are paying extremely low taxes now, why would they be getting any kind of a stock market benefit? That doesn't make any sense. Certainly it makes sense if you start looking at the Russell 2000, for example, where most of those firms are smaller, that you'd see the acceleration there in their earnings potential. But remember something else too, and that is that when you give people a tax cut but you don't cut government spending, what you're doing is creating monetary inflation because you're driving deficits higher. So as a result, you're going to get this sugar high where people say, oh, look at these fantastic things. But what is the reaction that comes from that? The reaction is borrowing costs increase. And today, leverage is, at least if you look at margin debt's at an all-time high, as an example. Well, those costs are going to go up. So are the costs to borrow more money, which companies have been doing in order to engage in buybacks and in some cases pay dividends. And where this becomes really important within the multinational context is that companies like Apple have been borrowing money against their foreign reserves, which have not been taxed. Now they have to pay a tax on that reserve, whether they bring it back to the United States or not. It's a deemed repatriation. So now what you've done is you've double whammied the people who went out and did this uneconomic thing, which, by the way, they shouldn't have done in the first place. But, you know, the markets will let them get away with this kind of stuff. So now they have to pay a tax on this foreign capital, but they've already encumbered it by borrowing money against it. So not only are you paying the interest on that borrowing, but you got to pay a tax on the money. So you borrowed $100 million, you spent it, but the net present value of your $100 million overseas is now only $85 because you have to pay a 15% tax. How's this going to work out so good for all these people? I don't think it does in the long term, but today in the immediate sense, oh, sure. You know, this is the kind of news that the market likes, and so it goes higher.
Carl, you mentioned Amazon. Let's talk about Amazon for a second. So they made an acquisition recently of Whole Foods for, I believe it was roughly $13 or $14 billion. And it was immediately accretive. You know, the earnings went right to the bottom line. The capitalization of the company went up more than the acquisition cost. And this is an interesting situation where these types of acquisitions can happen virtually without any risk and just put earnings right to the bottom line. So you mentioned monopolies there for a second. As long as these monopolies are allowed to continue this type of predatory behavior, I guess you could call it, you know, there should be some further movement on the upside for these prices.
Well, yes and no. I mean, if Amazon was trading at, 20 times forward earnings and did an acquisition like this, well, 20 times whatever the adjusted forward earnings are, that seems to make an awful lot of sense, right? So you'd see a price adjustment there. But remember that you got rid of, at the same time, you put that EPS and that bottom line profit on Amazon's balance sheet. Whole Foods was a publicly listed company and they disappeared. So in total index terms, it should have been a wash. Now, it wasn't when you look at what happened, because the market immediately adjusted the market cap of Amazon up by the value of the acquisition and what they absorbed, and then added a bunch more on it in the next few months. So that's not how it ended up working. But if you look at it from an economics perspective, you know, that's what the efficient market hypothesis says should have occurred. It's not what did occur. So there's something else going on. And the thing with these monopoly acquisitions is that as they continue onward for a period of time, they look fantastic. But remember, Amazon is sort of a special case, and that Jeff Bezos has had this walk on water pass. He's bald Jesus and has been for 15 years. The company's never had to make any more profit than a grocery store as a whole. It engages in cross subsidization because it loses crazy amounts of money on fulfillment expenses and SG&A, most of which it shoves off on AWS customers, some of whom, by the way, are the government, which, you know, what market force is involved in driving down that price, right? So what ultimately derails this is when you have a competitor or a set of competitors, and gee, we have a few of those now. We have Microsoft with Azure. We have Google with their offering. We have a bunch of smaller ones like Rackspace and DigitalOcean that are out there that are nibbling away at the heels. And ultimately, as margin compression in a commodity business bites you, then the ability to play that cost-shifting game goes away. So I don't know how long that goes on. The last, last entry into this was when Amazon took what ended up as originally was spare capacity in their computing engine that they used to route orders and things like this and turned it into a product with a very high operating margin. And hey, listen, I love businesses that have 30% pre-tax operating margins. Okay, I ran one. We ran 43% for 5 years straight. So that's a fantastic line of work. However, when you use that to subsidize something that's a money loser and the government lets you get away with things like that, there's a problem there.
All right. Well, that's it for this episode of Double Down with me, Max Kaiser, and Stacey Herbert on Sputnik Radio. Thanks to our guest, Carl Denninger. Until next week. Bye, y'all.